more you do God's will, the more you experience Him. And the more you experience Him, the more you do God's will. There becomes a spiritual cycle that grows with intensity. Do you hear what I'm saying? Is God real to you? I think very few people know God in a real way. And because you do not know Him in that way, you would consider it crazy, just you alone, never mind 2 million other people, to go through a desert, even in this day and age. Don't believe it? Try the Sinai desert, even for 2 days, and see how far you'll go. No water. You'll carry all the water you like. It's all on foot, by the way. No helicopters, no cars. No four-track, you know, special vehicles that drive in the sand. How long would it take you to walk the shortest route across the Sinai? Find the shortest route you can. Try it on foot. Going into there with just the water you can carry and the food you can manage to eat and see how far you'll go. Not very far, I'm afraid. You see, we read all this and we don't understand. You cannot bring supplies for 2 million people that will last for very long. Neither food nor water can last that long. God wanted to show when He is King, you will lack nothing. As long as you do what His will is, you will know the reality of God. It is too wonderful for words. I have taken up this challenge, the Lord has given me this challenge, and has never failed. I shared with some of you before, I had a dream. And my dream was, because China is open to the gospel in certain ways today. And how are we going to get the gospel into China as fast as possible in the shortest amount of time? And one thought, of course, came to me is radio. We need radio. We need to get. I said, Lord, would it be, according to your will, that we can try to get the gospel into China by radio? And I still recall how I came back to Montreal once, and I talked to a person in our church who was a professor at McGill, who was in the electrical engineering department. I asked him about radio transmission. He said, well, I'm not in that field, because he is in generators, not in transmitters. So that's a different field. He said, but I know a professor who is specialized in that field. And so he introduced me to this professor. And the first thing the professor asked me is, do you have a lot of money? I said, no, I don't. He said, well, if you want to talk about broadcasting, you are talking millions. We are not talking here small money. He said, without millions, you can't talk about broadcasting. And so he made suggestions like renting time from CBC, World Radio, and so on, and broadcast from Canada, and so on. He didn't know whether CBC would rent the time or not, but he said we could inquire. So I had to leave that for the time being, until one day somebody, a co-worker, said to me, oh, I've just been approached by a Christian radio station that wants to sell their station broadcasting into China. I said, really? And I thought, I remember the professor saying, you need millions. I said, how much are they talking about? Uh-oh, $1 million. $1 million? Where do we have $1 million to come from? We don't have rich people in our churches. How are we going to raise those funds? So we have, that is another challenge. Is your God real? Now I thought, if this is your will, Lord, what is $1 million, right? For God, is that a big deal for us? It's no big deal. Is $1 million a lot of money for you? Of course it is. Especially when you have not even a fraction of that amount to come up with. And you know what was our reply to it? Because this radio station was desperate to sell. They were in debt. They were desperate to sell. And they wanted to sell to people who love the Lord, because it's a Christian station and they love the Lord. And they were selling it at a fraction of a price, because as the professor said, the radio station cost millions, and that station originally cost $5 million some years before. But they were willing to settle for $1 million. So they said, what's the answer? Are you going to take it? Oh, you look in your pockets and you wonder, can't be done. But I have known my God through all these years. Is God real? Real enough to put $1 million on the table? You think so? What would your answer have been? And I said, yes, we'll take it. Then we'll see what the Lord will do. Well, it's wonderful. So since the year 2000, the radio station has been broadcasting into China 4.5 hours every day. The word of God goes out and can reach more people in a single day than most of us could possibly do in a lifetime. 4.5 hours a day. And we had more challenges beside that. First of all, we had no radio engineer who knew anything about operating a radio station. No idea how to operate the station. Looks like there's a lot of problems with the translation system going on. So, yeah. But I guess we have to move on. So, that's why I say, unless you know God is real, it's not possible even to live this Christian life as it is meant to be lived. Did you in Montreal find that somebody passed you a bag which says donations for radio station? That's the normal way churches would do things. Collect funds. Raise funds. We got more than 25 churches that pass the bag around and collect funds. We never do that. Nobody saw a bag passed in front of them to collect their funds. I trust in the living God. I ask no one to raise $8 million. How much did you give? Probably nothing, or not much. And where did the $8 million come from? It's wonderful how God works. In fact, God went ahead. There was a brother who had his total savings of over $3 million. And about 2 years before that, he had come to me and said, I want to sell my apartment, which is worth $3.5 million. I want to give it to the Lord's work. He says, where can I put it? I said, nothing at the moment. Nowhere to put it at the moment that I can suggest. So why don't you just keep it until the time that the Lord will draw upon that money? And the next year he asked me, I waited 1 year already. When can I? Well, he was very anxious to offer this $3.5 million. I said, well, sorry, nothing has come up yet, you see. So why don't you just hang on to those $3.5 million until something comes up? And it was about 1.5 years later. And he asked me, what about the $3.5 million? I don't want this money hanging around, you know. In Hong Kong, you put money in the bank, you get no interest. It's about 0.5% or some incredible amount. You'll get nothing for that in the bank. So by that time I said, yes, there is something now. Would you like to put it in? It's a radio station that we are going for. Oh, his eyes brightened up. Finally, he said, finally. And then amazingly, other people approached me. I have 1 million, I have 2 million. And we had to pay up for this radio station within 1 year. We had to make 3 payments. If we miss any payment, we forfeit all our purchase rights, and we lose the money we had already paid. In other words, if we had already paid 3 installments out of 4, and we failed to pay the 4th installment, you lose the entire thing because you're in breach of contract. So you had to trust the Lord that the money would be there for each installment. Without publicity, nobody heard any publicity from us. We raised no funds. We had no gimmicks, nothing. Amazing how God works. I stood there as a witness to this whole thing, the wonder of God's power. No human methods used. How real is your God? Now, when Israel had God as king, miracles were happening. What was happening? Well, when the people needed, 2 million people needed water to drink, can you imagine how much water is needed in the desert? And you know what Moses did. He was told, strike the rock and water will gush forth. Struck the rock and the water came out. Rock, water out of rock? How much water do you need? Gushing out like a river, because you need 2 million people not just to drink but to wash themselves too, you know. That's amazing. What about food? Came down in the form of manna. In the morning it was there on the ground. Pick it up. You can cook, make bread or pitas with it if you like, whatever you want. It's all there, you can eat, and very nourishing too. Eat that and you're fine. 40 years. 40 years God supplied the water. God supplied the food. You think it's a fairy tale? You think our God is a fairy tale? But if you do, then this message is not for you. People said, how practical is God? When I'm hungry, does he give me food? Well, he sure does. I experienced that for nearly 3 years. I can speak as one who knows. It's too bad when you're in comfort and ease and the government looks after all your needs because you don't need God to provide anything for you. You're sick and have no money and no God. You're really in trouble. But when you have God, you lack nothing. Provided that, you are always truly doing His will. Now, by doing His will is not temporarily doing His will. It does not mean thinking that you are doing His will. We are very good at deceiving ourselves. We have to check ourselves all the time. What do I mean about thinking, doing His will? There's the difference between religion and spirituality. I said yesterday, I have no use for religion, and neither do you, to be very honest. Do you know what's the difference between religion and spirituality? Which one do you have? There is a world of difference. To be spiritual is to be in touch with God, to know Him. Whom to know is life eternal. Do you know Him? If you don't know Him, you don't have life eternal. That's the biblical words. To be saved, in biblical language, that is to have a relationship with God, you have to know Him. Now, you don't have to know Him in religion. In fact, hardly anybody in religion knows anything about God. They know about Him, knowledge-wise. They don't actually know who they are talking about. You see, religion is a human system, mostly of culture. You go to a church, you look at the architectural style. Is that style in the Bible? Of course not. It's a human style. If you're in the West, you have Western architectural style. If you go to the East, you have churches in Eastern architectural style. It has nothing to do with the Bible. It's nothing to do with God. It's just our style. We like to build a building in this style. You can have a church like this with log cabins up there. It doesn't look very fancy. I mean, it's a log cabin church. It's still a church. It's just a building. You can have any kind of style you like, but that has nothing to do with God. And then you have all kinds of ceremonies and rituals. Now, we have certain ceremonies too, right? We have to start with, 40 minutes of singing or 10 minutes of singing. I go to a church that sings from beginning to end, and I wonder if there's a message to be heard in this church. I'm just singing song after song after song after song. And when they're singing on the platform, there's a group there, and the people down here also singing sometimes, and then it's up on the platform. And this thing goes on, and I said, I'm here 1 hour, and is this going to be the end? Is the pastor just going to say, okay, here's the closing prayer, and we can leave? But in the end, there was actually some sharing. We're not preaching, but sharing something, and I can't remember what was shared. Every church has its own tradition. The charismatics seem to think that singing is about everything there is to it. Occasion with a bit of message, and a message, as I hear sometimes on TV, is all about how you can get rich. Follow this principle, you know, Abraham's principle. Abraham was very rich, so what you do is what I call the gospel of Abraham. They didn't preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, they preached the gospel of Abraham, because Jesus is poor and Abraham is rich. Who wants the gospel of Jesus? We want the gospel of Abraham. That's the way to be rich. He had countless herds and flocks and so on. Yeah, well, we can translate that into property or cars or whatever. Gospel of Abraham? In which generation are we living nowadays? That's Christianity. That's religion. So I don't want to name names in this thing, but you just turn on the TV and you'll hear all you need. All the other big deal is healing. Whatever sickness he's praying for you on the screen. I see right now that somebody has a cancer there. The cancer is here and there. Well, you'll never be wrong, because somebody has that cancer, you can be sure. And I'm praying for you right now. And then that cancer is going away. You only have to believe it. And somebody has a problem with his right eye. And now I'm praying for you. And well, somebody, you can be sure out there, has a problem with the right eye if you're speaking on the TV or radio. I mean, I'm just tired of these religious gimmicks and this nonsense. Because then, of course, at the end is, you know that to keep this program on the air, we need your generous donation. Please remember us and we'll give you a little booklet free of charge when you send in the money. We don't do that in our radio station. We don't do that. No, on the contrary, we ask if anybody wants this message, we will send it to you in print, if you like, or over the internet, if you like, whichever way you do. Never do we ask for a cent from anybody. There's the world of difference, you know. Religion takes money to continue. Spirituality doesn't require it. When you need it, God will give it. You don't have to ask anybody for it. There's a world of difference between one and the other. You can be a pastor in a church and you don't know God. The church is full of pastors who don't know God. They are my biggest enemies, because I show them up all the time. But they have no business to be a pastor when they don't know God, because the only kind of pastor I see in the Bible are people who walk with God, who know the living God. Don't think you go to a Bible college, you get yourself a degree of some sort or other, and that qualifies you to be a pastor. It qualifies you for nothing. You've got to know God. And if you came to this camp and you left without knowing God, it's a pity. You're not likely to hear another message very similar to this anymore. Because no pastor who does not know God will preach this kind of message. There's nothing to preach about. He doesn't know God. How can he preach that? So he has to preach religion. I went into a church once in Hong Kong and I got a lecture on biblical theology. Goodness, I thought to myself, I looked around and I wondered, does anybody know what this man is talking about? Well, because he doesn't know God, what is he going to preach? He has to preach something that sounds religious. And he opens a book on theology and he said, well, tell stories. I went into another church and I heard stories from beginning to end. Very nice, interesting stories, moral stories. At the end of it, when he finished, and I thought, oh, those are nice stories. And then I thought to myself, and so what was his point? What was the central point? What is he getting at? I asked Helen, I said, did you get the point of the message? She said, no. I said, what were those stories trying to tell us? I thought there must be some kind of, you know, something that threads them together. If there was something, I missed it, and he never said what it was. So religion becomes a means of entertainment, telling moral stories. As somebody said, all religions are the same. They just tell you to be a good person, and to a great extent, that's right. All religions on that level are basically the same. You want to be a Buddhist, it tells you to be a good man. You want to be a Muslim, it tells you to be a good man. It says, what religion doesn't tell you to be a good man? Did any religion tell you to be a bad man? Certainly not. So what is the difference? Christianity is no exception. Either you know God or you don't. And you know that is why Christianity is collapsing. What did I say? I said it's collapsing. You know why? Because as the religion is there, it can grow larger in number and influence because of its social structure. People join a religious organization for all kinds of personal reasons. I'm reading a book by a doctor who tells you how to live a better life to stay young. You see? And what does he say? One of the things he advises is go to church. I say, what? Yeah, but he didn't say go to church so that you know God. Go to church to be healthy. I said, be healthy? What do you mean, go to church, be healthy? Why? Because you have a society, you have a caring society, where people are nice people, generally speaking. Not always, but generally speaking.
And they are there, and so you walk in and Sunday and say, "Hi, are you? Haven't talked to you a long time. Are you well?" And so on. Somebody shows some caring to you, you know. If you stay at home, who cares about you? Your existence is of interest to no one. But you come into church, and at least for a few minutes, all right? And of course, many people are in a hurry to rush home for their lunch or supper, whatever it is. But they might even spare 5 minutes to talk to you. And some of them have little groups, and then you can join in there, and you have a support group. Support groups are very important. They support you emotionally, support you in one way or another. And so a church can grow without any spiritual content. Just like Alcoholic Anonymous or whatever it is. Support groups you need. But what I say was dying, because why? Fewer and fewer people within the church actually know the living God. Few and people actually know the living God. That is the tragedy. I don't want to build this type of church. I would like the church to be very small, and every man a true soldier of Christ. Every man really knowing his God. Every man committed to doing his will. I gave the messages on totally committed, because there is only one kind of Christian this Bible is concerned about here. People totally committed to God. And that message goes down well with some and not well with others. This book, Totally Committed, was taught the message was taught in Indonesia in one church, a church that was dying. And when the message was taught there, it caught fire. It brought on a revival in the church. And the co-worker wrote back and was so shocked. He said, "I, not even one of our best teachers, she went there and taught this church Totally Committed, and the church revived, and the pastors changed, and the whole situation changed." And she wrote back and said, what am I supposed to do now? What's the next step? Where do I go from here? Because they were quite panicky. Once the Lord started to work, the same thing happened to a church in China. I read the Chinese edition because a young man, passed it to the leaders of the church. They read it. They caught fire. You put it here, nobody wants to look at it. Totally committed. These are radicals. These are extremists. These are nutcases. Well, our time is gone. It rushes by. I just want to say one more time. With this, we best close. I have just too much material, so page after page that I wouldn't have time to talk about. But I just want to give you the essence. The essence of the Bible, the whole Bible, is concentrated in one thing only. And that's the only thing you need to know. You don't have to be a Bible scholar, because only thing you need to know is this. Everything depends and doing the will of God. And either you do it or you don't. That's all there is to it. You don't, you're out. As far as the kingdom is concerned. Because the kingdom is where the will of God is done. You don't. And doing it is not doing it according to what you think is right. What do I mean by that? Well, for example, you say, okay, I know that God likes me to help the poor, right? Okay, so I decide that I will help the poor. So every day, you know, every month, I will give out some money to some Christian organization or Christian Children's Fund or something. I will give some money to them. I am doing God's will. No. You got it all wrong. You have no right to decide what you do with that money. You say, what? That's right. You see, that's why I told you it's not easy. You have no right to do, because when you live with God, when you are belonging to Him, your money is not your own. I don't own a cent in my pocket. I don't. And not an exaggeration. Because every cent in my pocket is God's. I don't decide to say, I want to give this money. If I can decide what I do with it, that money is mine, not God's. If it's His, I haven't got the right to do with it what I want. Even if I think it might be pleasing to God to give, you know, $10 to this poor man by the roadside, I have to ask my God first, should I give him the $10? I'm willing, I'm happy to give him is this in accordance with your will? You see, God will certainly say, of course. Well, not of course.
Because you give him $10 and you walk down the road and you see somebody else in even worse condition and you don't have $10 to give because you already gave him the $10. Only he knows who has the greater need. You decide to give to Christian Children's Fund. How do you know that's the fund God wants you to give it to? There are lots of funds. Maybe he wants you to give that money somewhere else and you've given it to one, you haven't got it for the other. You see, a Christian life is always keeping in touch with God. But then you say, I don't know how to commune with God. You'll learn. If you are willing to do His will, then you have to know what that will is. Now, if God doesn't exist, you have no problems. Because if He doesn't exist, there is no will to know, isn't it? So you cannot commit yourself to something that doesn't actually exist. You'll soon discover when you want to do His will, do you want to do it? Then you have to know what it is. And you don't discover it just by thinking, this, I think what God wants. That's you, not Him. You do not play God and try to imagine that's His will. What you got to do is learn to listen. Listen. That's the next step, for which we don't have time today. I have just laid the foundation that the will of God is the central element. Now, there is nothing in the scriptures that does not have to do with the will of God. What is baptism? I said yesterday. If I want to expound baptism, I've put many messages on baptism. You can get that from our church website, the whole series on the meaning of baptism. I would even go. But it can be summarized in one thing. It is doing God's will. Simple. All the mechanics of it, how it works, how it actually can be spelled out in detail, it can be. One can write books on it, or one can sum it up in one sentence. Doing His will. Now, for example, we don't have to be theologians to live the Christian life. For example, you sit in the car. Do you know motor mechanics? Probably not much. I know perhaps more than most people because I've driven old cars most of the time and I've had to patch those old cars up and get them running. And my old cars run very well because I know a fair bit about how to keep cars going. If you always drive new cars, you don't have a clue how this thing is all covered by insurance. If it breaks down, phone call and somebody comes and fixes it up. I didn't have that kind of luxury. I have to fix it up myself. So I know these things. But you may not understand nothing about cars. That does not prevent you from driving a car. You can just sit in there, turn the key, and hopefully you know how to drive and you take the car down the road. That's all you do. Do you know anything about aerodynamics? Do you know anything about jet engines? Presumably not. Like me, I also don't know. But that doesn't prevent me from getting into an aeroplane and flying across the world. Do you know the dynamics of the spiritual life? Most people don't. But you don't need to know. All you need to have is the determination by faith to say, I am come, O God, to do Your will, and I will do it. You just tell me what Your will is. Is there a risk of being hooked on religion? Not at all. Why? For the simple reason is that if God doesn't exist, there's nobody to be hooked onto. There's nobody to give you His instructions. It's like going to the car, I put the key in the car and I say, okay, you can go now. Go where? Can't move. There's no driver in the seat. Now when my life is like this car, I hand it over to God and I say, here, the key is of my life. You run my life. Now if God doesn't exist, there's nobody to run your life. Nothing happens. Isn't it perfectly easy to understand? That is why the person who does that and finds that God indeed directs your life knows that God is real. That's the first step in beginning to know Him, beginning to hear His voice. He says to you, turn right, you turn right, turn left, you turn left. I think I've shared with you, I've taken that very literally. Because it was a necessity. Didn't I share this to most of you when I went to meet my cousin once in China and I didn't have a clue of what my cousin looked like? My cousin, who was a professor in Hunan in China, he phoned me once and said, I'm coming down because I'm taking an American professor down to Shenzhen who's going over to Hong Kong and leaving. And he said, would you be able to meet me? Because I'll be right at the border with Hong Kong. And we were in Hong Kong at that time. I say, yes, George, but listen, we haven't seen each other since we were teenagers.
And I don't exactly look like when I was a teenager. Neither do you, I'm sure. You know, and I haven't got a clue what you look like. So how are we going to meet?
No,
I have no idea about how I was going to recognize him from the crowd. And he had nothing. And so we met, and we tried to meet. And he said, well, do it like this. How about I meet you at the railway station when you come across from Hong Kong at the number one counter. There must be only one number one counter. I'll meet you at number one counter there. I said, okay, that's fine. I've never been to the station. I had no idea. Turns out he also had never been to the station. So at the number one counter, he just assumed. We got there, Helen and I got there, and I went to look for number one counter, and I discovered that nobody from China could even enter the railway station. Because only those from Hong Kong and with foreign passports could come into that station. As out of bounds for Chinese citizens, they couldn't come in. And so, of course, there was no use standing at number one counter. So I went out, we went out to the station, and out there were crowds and crowds of people. Multitudes of people. How am I going to find my cousin in that? Well, I will keep the story very short, because I think I've shared it once or twice before, I don't remember. Then I came out there, and then, as I told you, those of you who still remember, I said, there's only one thing left to do, to find him in this crowd and listen for instructions from the Lord. I'll become a guided missile, and he guides me. That's wonderful. As many as are the children of God, what does Scripture say, are led by the Spirit of God. The Bible does not talk in hypothetical terms or abstract terms. When he says led by the Spirit of God, means led by the Spirit. I said, Lord, there's no other way for me to find my cousin now. So you instruct me. I'm just listening. And he led me forward, and he turned this direction and turned that direction straight on. And there I met him. Of course, I didn't know it was him, but I assumed it must be him. When the Lord said, stop here, look up, that's where your cousin is. I looked up and I saw somebody standing on a ledge, because he was trying to look over the huge crowd of people trying to identify me. And he got a completely wrong picture of me, of course. So he was looking elsewhere, and I had no idea what he looked like. So I looked up and I said, are you George? He says, that's me. He looked down and said, I suppose you're Eric. I said, yeah. I told him afterwards the story. He was stunned. In this day and age, you can hear the voice of God. You sure can. But what's the secret? I have no secret other than what you have. I am committed to do his will in everything. Everything. Yes? I shared in Hong Kong that when I go into a fast food restaurant and there's a list of food on the list, I look up and down the list and I say, Lord, which one would you like me to eat? They were shocked. My goodness, you mean we have to ask God whether what we can eat in Tai Ka Lok, you know, in Hong Kong, in the fast food restaurant? I said, you don't have to. You are a free man. But I want to know. You say, well, what's the importance of that? Well, you know that. Sometimes I order from the same restaurant. I eat the food and I have no stomach trouble. Another person orders another dish and got diarrhea for the whole night. Does it matter? Yes, my God cares for me. He said, don't take that one. You take this one. I take that and I have no problems. You do your own thing. You are a free man. He's not going to send you to hell because you chose chicken instead of beef. No, no, no. Our God is not a tyrant, you know. But he cares. And that's why I say, Father, is it all right if I take this dish? I have no negative response. I go ahead. It's wonderful to walk with Father. That's why I say, I look around, I say, what a pity. Christians live this poverty-stricken spiritual life. They live a life that has no direction, no meaning, no purpose. What kind of a life would you live? Can you catch the vision? We are talking about vision, and vision depends on a living relationship with God. You have that relationship, you have vision. You experience him. That's why you have vision. You don't have that, you have nothing. Let us pray.